Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming over Facebook, live from our studios in New York City, and I'd like to welcome you. This is an Empowerment Hour. Today, we're going to learn about nutrients that we can take that helps our cells rejuvenate, live a longer life, how to repair damage where we thought, well, it's over, you can't do anything. Yes, there are things you can do. For example, there's a new study from the University of Calgary on how fiber, not a lot even, can make a big difference in helping change in children their gut bacteria. We also are going to look at prebiotics helping you reduce fat in the body. And a new study, a lot of people take their blood pressure from home with those little cups. 70% are inaccurate. That's not good. And also, an Orwellian medicine of the future. It's here now. I'll explain what they're trying to do, and a lot more on health and healing. Also, today we're going to deal with a lot of commentaries. I'm going to have a commentary on Obama, a hollow man filled with ruling class ideas, from Paul Street, from Counterpunch. Now, why would I want to do that? Because behind the scenes today, leading much of the animus and the whole charade that the Russians did everything that caused the election to fail and the attacks upon Trump is both the Clinton machine and the Obama machine. Sometimes the same individuals were in one White House and another. So we really have to ask, what are their motives? What did they achieve to help lessen disparity, to help more people who are in that 98-99% have a more quality of life? That's all in that commentary. Also today, we're going to have some audio clips for you. I'm sure you've all seen that little boy. It was very heart-rending photograph. He had dust all over him. He was in an ambulance in Syria. And the whole story was that the White Helmets rescued him, and that this was Assad, the president of Syria's war planes that had destroyed his village, and here he was injured. Well, it was all set up. That was not true. Today, we actually had the boy's father talking about this, and it's a very short audio clip, and he's speaking in Farsi, but I'll give you the translations to show you how the White Helmets that are part of our CIA funded over $100 million a year to them alone, scheme to destabilize Assad and perpetrate a myth that they're a good group of people, and everyone's bought into it, from Democracy Now to the Academy Awards and all the mainstream media. They keep supporting this, documenting these are good people, and we've done just the opposite. We've shown the truth to show you these people support terrorism, and they're part of the terrorist operation there. Now, we're going to show you that. We're also going to show you what happens when Anderson Cooper has on Alan Dershowitz about Trump, and is Trump's statements or is his actions impeachable? A different perspective. Also, a whole look at the Paris Climate Agreement that was discontinued by President Trump, but someone defending that action, but it sounds so professional. Well, we look behind, who is this person? Who's the organization behind it? These are all climate deniers. And I'll start also giving you additional information on what we can do about how bad the climate is getting. So we have a lot to share. Also today, part one of my documentary that you have not seen, it's only been shown in film festivals, Poverty Inc. It'll be in 10 parts that you'll see it. So we have a lot to share. First up, we're not eating enough fiber. I remember going to England to interview a man. In fact, I interviewed three men, Dennis Burkett, Dr. Burkett, and the most significant at the time writing on fiber, which at that time was called Roughage, was Dr. Pritikin. And then later, I interviewed a man who was a captain in the Navy. And all three in the English countryside in their homes, which I love the English countryside. And I remember what what one of them said. He said, at sea, the soldiers would get very constipated, and they had a whole series of gas, bloating, fatigue, yellowing of the skin, because something was missing, and yet we were giving them the normal rations at sea. But the moment we hit port, the moment we got into some of the tropical islands, we could give them fresh fruits and vegetables, everything cleaned out. And so after a couple of these, I began to look at this, and I did studies on roughage. And he said, I found that we needed a lot more roughage than what we were getting. When a soldier is on a ship and you're eating all canned and packaged and processed foods and a lot of meat, frozen chicken, frozen fish, frozen pork, that's what they were eating, you're not getting fiber. And he said, the average person in England today only gets about 3 grams of fiber per day. I said, well, how much do you think we need? He said, you need at least 30. Today, we are saying 50, 5-0. At that time, I just finished a study seeing how much fiber does the average American consume. It was around 5 grams, and it was considered very high if you got 10 grams. That was almost excessive. Then again, we thought that 5 milligrams, the B complex, was very high. We thought you only needed 1 milligram. Today, I would say between 50 and 100 milligrams minimum of the B complex. So we underestimated everything when it came to health. You know, 100 milligrams of vitamin C was considered really good. 500 was considered extreme. And yet, it really only becomes therapeutic when you're up around 5 to 15,000 milligrams. Intravenous is 50 to 200,000 milligrams. So everything we were doing to get healthy, we were doing minimally. Everything we could do to get sick, we were doing maximally. So here's the irony. We were absolutely out of our mind crazy when it came to creating disease. There was no limitation. In other words, if you wanted 20 French fries or if you wanted 100 French fries, nobody complained. If you wanted one burger or two patties or three, nobody complained. But if you took 6 vitamins, heads exploded. They couldn't handle that. 10, you were thought to be a schizophrenic, should be institutionalized. And they mocked people. Well, if you're a woman and wearing tennis shoes, you know, to walk around, that's just stupid. And so they called them little old ladies in tennis shoes. Well, those little old ladies were interested in health. They were exercising. They were drinking a lot of clean water. They were eating a lot of high-fiber foods, and they were healthy. Today, all their contemporaries would probably be dead. So I came back from this trip having interviewed Dr. John Yutkin, the first scientist physician in Europe to become chairman of a department of nutrition. And he said that you increase your risk of heart disease, cancer, diabetes, and high blood pressure if you don't have enough fiber. He was suggesting 30 grams. Today I'm suggesting 50. So are kids in America getting fiber? Absolutely not. Because what are they eating? They're eating processed foods. They're eating the hot dogs, the pizzas. Those don't have fiber. You need quality fiber. What's your single best fiber you could put into your body? Blueberries. There is nothing better than blueberries. Also for your brain, that would be the number one food for your brain. Right behind that would be pomegranate. You need soft fibers. You need hard fibers. You need fibers from nuts like almonds and walnuts and pine nuts. You also need fibers from legumes and pulses like soy and beans, lentils, split peas. And you need fibers also from vegetables, both starchy vegetables like potatoes and leafy vegetables. When you take all those vegetables and seeds and nuts and put them together, if you have it 3 times a day, you're getting 50 grams of fiber. The kids, a kid be lucky to get 5 grams of fiber today. Quote, a couple of teaspoons of fiber supplement taken daily has produced some exciting results that will help children with overweight or obesity maintain a healthier weight and prevent many diseases caused by obesity. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Gastroenterology. Now, they're suggesting powdered fiber. There's a problem. One of the most common causes of constipation today is the excessive use of laxatives. Why? Because when you use a laxative every day, you begin to lose the tone, the peristaltic wave-like movement of the intestines to bring food through there. If you ever watch a snake and you see a snake moving across the ground, it is a series of muscle contractions that allow it to move. Well, your intestine, which goes in circles, you ascending, descending, transverse, intestines, colon, food has to move through there. And it does this by little electrical charges, but also by the fiber. Water and fiber carry the food through very slowly, and where it gets digested, and then the nutrients actually get absorbed in little villi. Millions of little villi hanging down from the intestine, it gets absorbed up through there. So when you're eating cheese or meat or, let's say, processed breads, that's just doughy. It's just one conglomerate of mush and very little fiber. Animal proteins don't have any fiber. So just remember that. More fiber you have, the healthier you're going to be. University of Calgary also found a study showing that prebiotics, now anything that's a prebiotic or probiotic, meaning the good bacteria, will also help work with that healthy fiber and give you more health in the intestine, which means more health for your whole body. This is an interesting study that shows that 70% of home blood pressure monitors are inaccurate. That's according to this study. Quote, they are unacceptably inaccurate, which could cause serious implications for people who rely upon them to make informed health choices. This is from the University of Alberta. So if you have a home blood pressure monitoring, I suggest you go up and review Consumer Reports to see which they consider the most reliable. And I would also suggest that you use your occasional doctor's office to match it. In other words, before you go in to get your blood pressure taken, take it at home. Then when you get to the office, take it and see if there's a difference. You don't want to think that you have lower blood pressure than what you do, because then you could hurt yourself. And this is from the Alliance for Natural Health. It says, Big Brother's ready to watch you as you hop from doctor to doctor, treatment to treatment, and you have reason to be worried. Congress has moved us one step closer to establishing a unique patient identification system, what is called the UPI. UPI is meant to act like a passport into the healthcare system to aid healthcare institutions in matching patients with their medical records. A unique number assigned to every American gives access to that person's full medical records to every doctor in America, every hospital in America, every researcher in America, and every public health department in the country. So here you have millions of people who will now have access to everything in your medical history, going clear back. What if you have conditions that are private to you, you and your physician, you and your family? Do you really want people who could exploit that out there? No. But these are the things they pass to become laws, and then one more reason we don't have privacy. One way you can help save the planet, and I did a whole documentary on that, it's called Plant Codes, is by simply substituting beans for beef. And this is not me saying this time. This is from Susan Levin from Alternate. Here's what she says. As the world's second largest greenhouse gas emitter, the United States' withdrawal from the Paris Climate Agreement drastically curbs in international efforts to fight global warming. But concerned Americans don't have to feel powerless. It turns out that simple choices we make every day, or three times a day, have the power to help protect our planet. Recently, researchers from Loma Linda University released a new study finding that if Americans simply replaced the beef in their diets with beans, the United States would immediately reach up to 75% of its greenhouse gas emission reductions targets for 2020. It confirms what we've known for a while. To protect our warming planet, we must start moving animal products like meat, cheese, and eggs off our plates. Animal agriculture now contributes more to global warming than all forms of transportation combined. That means if you took all the planes, buses, cars, trucks, ships, trains together every day eating meat, contributes more carbon dioxide. The livestock industry also gobbles up massive amounts of resources, including land. Part of the problem is that growing and then converting animals, especially cows, into food is tremendously inefficient. By some estimates, just 1% of the calories fed to cattle eventually translate into human edible calories. That means that acres upon acres of land are devoted to growing crops or livestock feed instead of food for humans. In fact, a whopping 80% of protein from the U.S. crops is fed to animals. This would be enough to feed 1 billion people, every last person in the United States, Canada, and South America combined every day. On top of that, meat production gulps up huge amounts of water. We usually think about shorter showers and drier lawns when we think about water conservation, but agriculture accounts for 80 to 90% of our water consumption. Think of it this way. An average American's daily shower requires about 17 gallons of water. Making a single hamburger, just one single hamburger, guzzles up to 660 gallons of water per hamburger. Producing a pound of beef requires 1,800 gallons of water. To put it into perspective, producing just 3.2 pounds of beef, or 10 hamburgers, requires the same amount of water as an entire year's worth of showers. Now think of that. You take a shower every day, you add up the total amount of water at the end of the year, and it's equal to just 3.5 pounds of beef. So what can we do? Loma Linda researchers were on the right track when they proposed swapping beef for beans. Producing equivalent amounts of protein from beans requires just a fraction of the resources needed to make beef. One study found that compared with beef, beans require just 1/20th of the land usage per unit for protein consumed. So I would agree with that. And that's important that we make a switch. But let's say you're the average person and you're having a hard time doing it. We don't like to change. We like change. We just don't like to change. So here we're used to the meat because we've had it our whole life. So what if you just did it once a week? Now, I believe that Pope Francis has put out information to the Catholics around the world, a lot of Catholics, where instead of eating fish on Friday, that you eat vegetables and grains and beans, but go meatless on Fridays through Monday. That's a huge savings. Now, I have a lot of respect for this Pope. I think he's the most progressive Pope that I'm aware of, and certainly better than many of the ones they've had in the past. So he's loved and respected. He's also a scientist. And he's an environmentalist, so he knows this. So why don't all of us, if you're not already thinking about it, just try to go meatless, and I'll bet three things happen right away. One, I'll bet you have more energy. Two, I'll bet you don't feel fatigued after a meal, like you want to lay down for a while or take it easy. Three, I'll bet that you lose somewhere between 1/2 to 1/4 pound a week in weight, just from that. So you're going to be healthier. Your body's going to cleanse all that debris. The average person could have up to 16 pounds of impacted feces in their intestine at any given time. So we know that the cleaner our intestines, our colon, the healthier our body. The more meat you have in there, the more susceptible you are to polyps, inflammation, itises, and colon cancer, which is a deadly cancer. So give it up from Friday to Monday. See how you feel. That's the latest on Health and Healing. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us.
Oh,
Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll from our studios in New York, and we want to thank the thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people who are now listening and watching this over Facebook. Later this week, we hope to be able to present our video streaming to our Progressive Radio Network audience, and then next week, we will then add in the YouTube. So it's nice to be able to share this with you, because now you can watch some of the video clips that otherwise you could only hear it. Also, just take down this number. You never know when you're going to be someplace. You won't be able to hear the program live, and you want to hear an archive. Fine, you can take five archive programs at a time, and we don't charge for the use of our archives, by the way. They're free as a public service. But any portable listening device, any telephone, cell phone, computer, you can call a number and then select the archival shows, download them, and listen. That number is 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. Also, a special hello to those of you who are going to be joining me this coming Sunday. This coming Sunday night at 7 p.m., I'll be doing my next webinar. And this one was because of the enormous amount of questions I got after the webinar. Oh, Gary, I didn't have a chance to ask. My mom's suffering from beginning dementia. What can we do? And, oh, I've got a father who's got Alzheimer's. What can we do? And I've got a sister that's depressed. What can we do? I'm suffering from anxiety. What can I do? I can't sleep at night. What can I do? So what I'm doing, I'm going to show you a documentary that I've made that you haven't seen at 7 o'clock. Then following that, I'll spend about 2 hours giving the best protocols that I have for everything dealing with the brain. The title of it's Reversing Brain Aging Naturally. Every one of my webinars is always packed. In fact, thousands of people are not able to get in because they wait too long, and we have as much bandwidth as we can get. And so go now to GaryKnoll.com, and you can see this webinar, sign up for it. It's always full of information, more than what you can possibly handle. Also, yesterday, as I'm running in the park, this gentleman comes up to me and says, Gary, I've been listening to the show, and are you going to do a documentary on addiction? And I said, it's on my agenda. It's not current. I'm finishing up a documentary right now. I just got off the road 5.5 months of filming a very powerful documentary. In fact, one of my friends says, Gary, does this make you feel good? I said, nope. You're not going to feel good. Plant Code, you felt good, all right? This one, you're not going to feel too good. But boy, is it one of those where you're going to get information and insight you did not know from people you have not heard of, taken all over the world, that will be so enlightening. And we're just probably 2 weeks away from having our final rough cut. Then I do it every time. I quietly invite some members of our audience to come in to our offices and watch and give us their feedback to see how that impacts it. And for objectivity, for uniqueness, for originality, I do this with every one of my films. And then some very critical thinkers. We send it out to about 100 of the best minds on the planet. We go through an enormous vetting process for objectivity and a scholarship. We send it to the heavy of the heaviest, and Professor Andrew Harvey, people like that. Anyhow, and then when we finally say, okay, we're done, this message has never been given before, here it is, and then we will have a showing of it. And then I'll let you all know about it. Anyhow, as I was in the park, this guy comes up, and the answer is yes, I am going to do a documentary on addiction, but every kind of addiction, from food to sex to gambling, to alcohol, sugar, everything. And it will not be the kind of documentary that anyone else would do because I don't hold the same views, because I've worked with addicts for so many years, decades, by the thousands. And I was head of addiction at Trafalgar Hospital and the Institute of Applied Biology's program, so I know what works and what doesn't work. So I do not believe that addiction is a disease. I tell you that right up front. I believe it's about bad choices, but then your brain and parts of your brain can be influenced to where you suddenly, like with tobacco, they knew all along, and I'm going to prove this, the FDA and the U.S. Public Health Service knew all along from the patents that the cigarettes would create addictive behavior. and they did not tell the public. Now, when you're addicted to cigarettes, you can then develop emphysema that can kill you and cancer that can kill you. So how many people died? So I went back and did research on how many Americans died from the 1910s, 20s, till now. It's over 10 to 20 million, depending upon whose figures you use. So the government weighed 10 to 20 million of people dying. That's not important. Maintaining the proprietary patent rights and secrecy of the ingredients which are toxic, that's what we'll honor. So I really am going to slam the FDA for its criminal complicity in its crime against humanity. And I'm going to focus on every one of these people. But that's just a tiny part of it. Anyhow, a guy comes over to me and says, Gary, he says, I sometimes catch your show, but someone said that you thought the grapes were pretty good. Well, you know, why is a grape good? And I said, well, do your homework. He says, I don't want to do the homework. He said, but can you prove that they're good? You know, well, here is to Jeremy from yesterday in Central Park. Jeremy, I'm not doing this for you because your conversation with me showed me that if you say, I want to know something from you, but I don't want to do the homework on it, I wasn't born to kiss your ass, Jeremy, or do your homework, or save your life. I'm not here as a proselytizer or health cop. I'm not here to prove anything to anyone. I'm here to share from love and kindness, from caring more about you than obviously you do about yourself. But then again, I'm at that point in my life where I'm taking an honest look and I'm saying, what is the purpose of most people's lives outside of buying and selling? Break it down to the most common base element. But I work in a tire factory, Gary. That's not me. You're making a tire that someone's going to buy. I'm not saying this is good or bad. I'm not judging it morally. I'm just saying when we reduce our life to just simple commerce, then where is the poetry? Where is the healing? Where is the love? Where is the joy? Where is the companionship? Where is the friendship? Where is the bonding? Where is the relationship? Where is the service to humanity? Where is the love of nature? Where does that come into your equation of buy, sell, and what comes from it? It's my job. I got to work at it even if I don't like it, even if it's not good, even if it's toxic to people or humans. I make a living. Or I'm buying something because I can profit from it. There's Wall Street. When was the last time Wall Street actually created a job? When did they actually build a factory? When did they actually make something outside of an exchange of making money off money? And then we look and say, what is the meaning of my life? What was I born for in this life? And so I believe that we are at a turning point where some people are finally awakened because of the crisis in their life. They have no choice but to look straight in the eye of life and say, my God, have I been living such a superficial existential existence? Yeah. But for everyone else who cares about health and who do research, or those of you who may not have a computer or not know how to use it, this is a gift to you. Because I also think that we have two choices. We can either be intentionally aware or intentionally unaware. And I believe that stupidity is an intention, not an inherited genetic defect. I didn't know that Hillary Clinton was this bad person. Well, then you chose not to. I wasn't aware Donald Trump was that much of an idiot. Well, then you chose not to know. I wasn't aware that every president of the United States is nothing more than a narcissistic kleptocrat. Well, then you didn't choose to. Why don't we stop defending the choices we've made and look at what in our life we can deconstruct, come back to what is real and honest and authentic? Here's just some of the science. This is all from peer review. This comes from the best scientific sources, PubMed, that the government uses. I'm only going to mention some, like the Journal of Psychiatric Research, abstract. Antidepressant-like effects of the transfer of resveratrol and chronic stress model, behavior and neurochemical evidence. Now, that's just mumbo-jumbo to you. What that is to me as a scientist, the nutrients in grapes can help rebalance brain chemistry. That's what it's saying. So if I know this as a clinician, someone who is board-certified in my field, and dietetics and nutrition, I'm going to use grapes in that person's diet if they are suffering from this. From the PLOS One, resveratrol, that's the active ingredient in grapes, ameliorates the chemical microbiotic induction of inflammation and insulin resistance in human placenta, adipose tissue, and skeletal muscle. That means that there's a nutrient, a very important nutrient called resveratrol. I believe we should have about 100 milligrams a day minimum and up depending upon what we need. There are more than 6,000 studies just in the peer-reviewed journal on that one nutrient in grapes. It is certainly a superstar. It's in the top 10 nutrients you can take into your body. It also helps with anti-aging. It helps in repairing damage to our DNA. But in this case, it's telling us what it does. It turns off inflammation, and especially it helps modulate insulin. So diabetics, pre-diabetics, that's 100 million Americans. That's almost one in every three Americans could benefit from it. And then look at all the people who have adipose tissue. That's over one-third of the entire adult American population are fat. And what about our skeletal muscle? That's 100% of everyone. And then we have from obesity research, the effects of resveratrol intervention on risk markers of cardiovascular health in overweight and obese subjects, a pooled analysis of randomized controlled trials. So once again, it's helping your heart, and especially risk markers of cardiovascular, that's C-reactive protein and homocysteine and fibrinogen. Three different markers, you can't feel them, they're silent. But when they're elevated, you have a higher risk of having a heart attack or stroke or congestive heart failure, some form of cardiac episode. So wouldn't you like to know that what you're eating and drinking and doing is lowering those? You're turning down the inflammatory markers, putting you at less risk. So resveratrol does that. I'll do one more. The Journal of Medical Chemistry, abstract quote, preventative oral treatment with resveratrol of pro and pro-drugs drastically reduce colon inflammation. Okay, it reduces inflammation. Well, what possibly could that do? Ileitis, Crohn's disease, gastrointestinal polyps, ulcers. Those are some of the conditions very common in people. And think of every parent that has a child with some form of autism spectrum disorder. Remember, autism is not a disease. It is a spectrum, meaning it can go from mild to extreme Asperger's. So let's just say that almost 99% of the kids diagnosed with autism have some form of mitochondrial dysfunction and dysbiosis. They also frequently have inflammation, diarrhea in the intestines. That could help turn that off. Now, I just want to show the people at home. Look at how many abstracts on each page right here. American Journal of Dermatology. It shows abstract containing gel for the treatment of acne vulgaris, a single-blind vehicle-controlled study. Journal of Alzheimer's Disease, a combination of resveratrol and curcumin is effective against aluminum chloride-induced neuroinflammatory. So think of the aluminum in vaccines. Think of the aluminum in beverages where people are drinking canned beverages. Frequently it's aluminum. Think of people putting something in a microwave or heating it where they put aluminum foil over it. So that goes into the body, goes in the brain. Resveratrol helps that. You're looking at all these. How many right here? I just have about 300 right here. All of these studies I'm showing you, this is all from peer-reviewed literature. So the next time someone says, well, eating grapes, drinking grape juice, why? You'll know that it's one of the 10 most important things you can put in your body every day. Now, I'm going to... Well, first we have Elizabeth in the studio. And Elizabeth, did you get a lot of response from people who wanted to ask questions on the air?
Yes, I did. It was difficult to choose.
Only choose those that a lot of people might benefit from the answer.
Right, yes. This is a good one for women. This is from Melissa from Los Angeles. First of all, she's asking about a radio. She's got a radio question. She says she's listened to you for 30 years, 6 hours every Wednesday on KPFK. No one ever said why you left. And will you come back to the station? That was her first one.
I was on KPFK for about 33 years, 6 hours a week. I left without fanfare. I believe in doing things with some dignity and class. I did not accuse anyone. I simply stopped. I told Roy Tuckman of Hollywood, whose show I was using as that vehicle for those years, that I could no longer raise money nor support a station that engaged in the constant attacks, what I consider just bad broadcasting, and whose management I would not support because I forfeited on WBAI New York for 41 years as salary, KPFK in Los Angeles for 33 years, and PFW in Washington, D.C. for 36 years. That would have been about $5.5 million that over that total three programs, different ones, a total of 16 hours of original broadcasting a week I did, all to help them, raising over $50 million and bringing in the largest audience in each station. But if your management does not respect its listeners, if they ask for premiums money and then don't deliver the premiums, which, by the way, is illegal, and if people complain, they could be challenged on it. The station's good, but they don't care. And when you have people on the air using it in using racial epithets and identity politics and bragging about how they can exclude the audience they don't want, I can no longer support that. And my contributing the lion's share of the money, up to 50%. In fact, the last fund drive I did on KPFK, I raised him $538,000 out of $1 million, over half. Mm-hmm. And yet, that's going to the people who are continuing to produce bad radio. We're not allowing really good progressive young people, programs we need to hear. And so, no, I will not go back under any circumstances. I don't want to be a part of that. That in life, there are times when we have completed a passage. And no passage is all bad or good. There's all different combinations of energies that we meet, experiences we have. And I love the audience, my audience, and that audience is now listening over Progressive Radio Network if they choose to. And same with PFW. I left without fanfare because I just could no longer support the fact that, well, the actual reason was because they were a year behind in delivering the premiums, and I could not, would not raise any more money because they wouldn't make the good, and if someone's going to do that, I'm not going to have anything to do with it. As I've already put BAI on notice, you don't buy the premiums, I'm not going to raise any more money. But it goes beyond that. I remember doing marathons, and there's a certain excitement when you do the first marathon, like the first Los Angeles Marathon, which I won a gold in, the first Jamaica Marathon, London Marathon, Los Angeles Marathon, San Francisco Marathon, Montreal Marathon, Long Island Marathon, Waterfront Marathon, Jersey Shore. I did all those the first that they ever did. And I did them with a whole group of people, and it was a wonderful experience. And I don't know how many marathons did. I never kept count. I was told once someone sharing my archivist said, oh, you've done over 60 marathons.
It was a lot.
I think it's 80. But then the day comes when you just sigh, why should I do another one? Do you remember the movie with Tom Hanks playing a lot of different characters, went through a lot of different transitions in his life, and what was the name of the movie? Forrest Gump. Wasn't it Forrest Gump? Yeah, Forrest Gump. Anyhow, he's running, and for no particular reason, he's running across, and suddenly he's getting a beard, and everyone's running with him, and then one day he just stops. Well, there's a time in life where we must, if we're not encouraged to stop, we should stop and say, do I need to write a new story? Do I need a new beginning? Do I need something to inspire me to go to the next level of my life? New experiences, new friends. Open yourself up to new friendships where maybe before you wouldn't have had an older friend, only want friends your same age. I've always enjoyed people who are much older than me. The sad part is when you have a long friendship and they die and you miss them, but at least you had the benefit of having that experience. But everything in life has an expiration date, so learn to, with some dignity and quality of thought, appreciate the best that you had in any given moment and then let it go. And that's the message.
Right.
You know, let it go.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Does that answer that?
Yes. You've let it go. You're not going back to KPFK.
Yeah, I'm not going back.
Okay. And the second part of the question is, she's a history teacher, and she's always enjoyed your discussions where you've brought history into your commentaries. Her question is, she knows you have a great deal of respect for women's contributions throughout history. Looking at the 20th century, who would be the one person you believe has made, the one woman that you believe has made a significant contribution, but at the same time struggled against misogyny?
That wouldn't be an accurate answer, because you could not define one woman's efforts by one century. My goodness, think of the women. Think of Rachel Carson. Without her, we would not have had Silent Spring and her other book also, and the entire environmental movement, which Ralph Nader was substantially responsible for creating, and certainly the defining guidelines to protect our environment was Ralph Nader. You can't put a value upon that. And she was attacked that entire time. Big industry attacked her nonstop. You also had Jane Goodall. Now, Jane is still alive. Who more to help all of the chimpanzees and gorillas and protect their habitats? There have been other people. But she is certainly a voice. And she didn't get cooperation in many of the countries where she was at, and still doesn't. You also had Margaret Mead, the great anthropologist. And look what her contributions. So you have to look at Mother Teresa. Each woman provided something unique to us. She raised a standard of awareness of what it means to be a woman. Maya Angelou. I did one of my first interviews with her on her book, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. In fact, there's a photograph of Maya and myself in one of my very first radio broadcasts. You had Eva Peron as a populist, Amelia Earhart, Rosa Luxemburg. Who else would I put on there? Madame Curie, Rosa Parks, Betty Friedan, and Helen Keller. And also, have you ever heard of Gertrude Bell?
No.
Okay, well, you should have. She's English.
Oh, sorry.
Gertrude was, in my opinion, one of the most unique women of the 20th century. She was born around, I think, 1886. I believe she died in 1926. She didn't come from royalty. She didn't come from high wealth, but her father was in the mining business. She lived in the country, and she didn't want to become a Victorian woman. She was far more independent. She went to Oxford, and she was the first woman to be first in her class in history at Oxford, which was a big deal at the time. And then from there, she didn't want to be a part of the gentry. She went to exotic places. She went to Egypt, and there she went to Syria. Now, mind you, she's going to Syria at a time when people had not gone to Syria. The old Syria and what would become Iraq, which was not Iraq. It was all part of the Ottoman Empire, but it was the old Mesopotamia. And she traveled alone. Now imagine, A, being a stranger, B, being a woman. And she would go from village to village, and she would meet people, and she befriended them. And she also did something unique. Do you remember the movie Lawrence of Arabia?
The original.
The original Lawrence of Arabia.
Yes, I have seen it. And she
along okay, with Peter O'Toole. Yeah. And there was a scene in there, one of the first scenes in the movie, where he comes on the desert on a camel, and he comes up to a well, and he's getting water for himself, and there's another man getting water, and suddenly there's a shot rings out, and the man is killed. And Omar Sharif comes up, and he said, "That's our well." And he knows he can't drink from that well unless he has permission or pays us. And it shocked T. Lawrence, because it was so uncivil. Well, Gertrude Bell was the first person ever to find where every well was when on her travels. And she did, she had friends at the National, the British Geological Society, and she would make charts. How many wells, where they're at, can you use them, which village do they belong to? But also she made enormous, I think she did somewhere around 1,600 diaries. an unfathomable amount of diaries. Wow. And she'd write in it everything about every tribe. She'd name the women, and she'd communicate with them. She knew Farsi. She spoke in fluent Arabic. Very few women did at that time. Very few men did at that time. And she ended up being so enamored by Syria at the time. And the Turks didn't like her, but they were afraid to do anything about her. So they had spies always trying to figure out where she was going, what she was doing. And then when the war was over between the Ottoman Empire after World War I and the British and all the others, she was appointed the person who would decide the boundary lines of Iraq and Syria and the whole Middle East. She did it. No one else. It was her. And also, there were no museums. She went out. She was an archaeologist. And she dug up historical elements, cataloged them, and she built the first museum in that part of the world, outside the Cairo Museum, which is a different area. And she was this curator. And she was very close friends with Lawrence of Arabia, who was there at that same time. And she supported the first ruler. She was on who selected the king who would become king of Syria, then king of Iraq. Yeah, that's what she did. She was a friend of Winston Churchill. In every one of the old photographs at that time, there she is. So she was one of the most important women of the 20th century. She did it on her own. She didn't have male companions. She would spend her time always, 7 days a week, she'd be always meeting and looking to what she could do to help bring quality of life to these people. Mm-hmm. That's what she did. So you see, each and every one of these women contributed something that we all should be extremely grateful for. Because you go to Iraq today, it's a mess. And she warned about this. You go to Syria today, it's a mess. And she said that governments, especially the United States, which, by the way, you may not know this, but when Syria and Iraq were being formed, legally formed by this map that she made. And why did she make the map? Because she was the only one who had gone into the territories, knew the dialogue, knew the people. She could go to every village in Iraq and Mesopotamia, and she knew the people. She had been there. She had lived with them. You know, not hotty-totty, not with a caravan. You know, she lived in their tents. She drank their water. She ate their food. She participated in their customs. And they loved her. They loved her. And yet, not a word in America. If you look at a history of Iraq today, you won't even see her name.
Right.
So,
yes.
Just a little bit of history. Thank you.
Fascinating. And they would have all have dealt with misogyny, but some of them just gone on anyway.
The British were extremely misogynist. Yeah. They didn't like her at all. But no one had the knowledge she had. Mm-hmm. King Faisal, the first king of Iraq, she selected him.
Thank you.
Who would have thought at that time, with the misogyny of Winston Churchill, and he was a racist pig, he is deplorable, and yet he's the most respected person in English history. Boy, that the English should learn about their own history. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. Now, I want you to watch the first part, and I can only get to the first part today, and we may not get to all of it. I don't want to run into the next show's time. Poverty, Inc. This is a documentary that shows you the truth behind the money being made, the exploitation of all assets, the privatization of corporate America, of public lands, the greed, how politicians are bought and sold. This has got it all in it. Poverty, Inc. Watch now.
How did America go from a nation that made it through the Great Depression to a nation that's now moving into the greatest depression in worse shape than it's ever been before?
we have a collapse around us, an economic collapse, a global economic collapse.
It's a class war of corporations to shift the burden onto people, and of the richest citizens to shift it onto everybody else.
We have undergone a coup d'etat in slow motion, and they've won, and we've lost. We live in a corporate state. There's no piece of legislation by either party that seeks to redress the injustices, the grievances, and the legitimate suffering of the American people.
Other rich democracies that have capitalist economies that are as, and in many cases, more integrated in the global economy than we are, yet have nothing that looks like the rates of poverty we see in the United States.
We have been rendered utterly impotent as citizens. We have no formal mechanisms by which to ameliorate the deprivation, the dislocation, the disenfranchisement that has been visited on working men and women in this country.
You can't stop the crashes on Wall Street until you stop the skewed income distribution.
The consequences throughout the country are devastating. The numbers of people foreclosed, 1 in 4 children needing food stamps to eat, and there's no hope in sight.
The big lie that was sold to the American people, and one sucker bought it after another. You could make it on your own. But they don't tell you the other part of it. The reason you go to Harvard, Princeton, and Yale is to be a member of the club. They're not doing it on their own. They're not making the hundreds of millions of dollars because they're such geniuses. It's an inside club with inside deals.
When you create an oligarchic state and you become tone deaf to the pain that is visited on masses of people who, through no fault of their own, it's not their fault that the manufacturing jobs got up and left for Mexico and now are packing up and leaving for China. That is the responsibility of a state that betrayed its citizens.
Break the workforce, break unions, break the aspirations that workers have for a measure of dignity and the ability to sustain their families.
All of the protections that prevented a predatory corporate and oligarchic class from preying on weaker segments of society, but all the constraints were lifted and the assault began.
Wall Street has very intentionally and creatively created a system that absolutely guarantees that most people will not be able to find a job adequate to put food on the table.
We've had an overthrow in this country, but it happened from Wall Street.
They're bankrupting the country.
Lending each other money which didn't exist, paying each other bonuses from profits which weren't real.
They're looting the U.S. Treasury by printing trillions of dollars in greenbacks.
The free market means you don't go to jail when you pull a ripoff. That's part of the marketplace.
It's almost another world. Some writer called it Richistan. I mean, these corporate overlords make $900,000 an hour.
The goal is the third worldization of America.
We've gone from first world to third world in a blink of an eye.
The whole world, in fact, has been stolen by robber barons.
Speculation today is what is ruining the global economy. There are literally people starving.
It is no longer profitable to save lives. It's more profitable to kill people and destroy things, and that's exactly what's happening. So now when you see the Dow going to 10,000, 10,400, that's not because more people are working and happier, it's because more people are being killed.
The super rich have taken extensive measures to keep people in poverty. They've opposed every kind of democratic policy or legislation that people have tried to pass in the 19th, 20th, and 21st centuries.
We need to understand with Thomas Jefferson that the sole and orthodox purpose of government, as he put it, was ensuring the happiness of its people, not the wealth of its corporations, not the growth of its domestic product, but the happiness of its people.
That's just the introduction to the film Poverty, Inc., all those burned-out houses. I filmed those in Camden, New Jersey. I then got out and walked the streets. In upcoming episodes, tomorrow you'll see a little longer episode, I build upon what has happened and why are we not paying attention to these problems. But they are invisible because, as Chris Hedges just said, they're outside of the metropolitan area, and they're not what we want to see. If we don't want to see a problem, we deny it. We avoid it. But it doesn't go away. It's still there. If someone's hungry, the fact you don't want to feed them or help them or care about them doesn't mean they're going to become any less hungry because everybody walks away overfed and undernourished. Powerful film. Part 2 tomorrow. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening and watching. Look forward to sharing more on our next program.